Right. This is exciting. I like it. It's quite good being up here. So, Darth Vader and Luke Skywalker were talking. And, yeah, I know what you're thinking. Bad joke coming. Yeah. Darth Vader and Luke Skywalker were talking. Darth Vader basically says to Luke Skywalker, says, Luke, I know what you're getting for Christmas. And Luke goes, what? And Darth Vader goes, Luke, I know what you're getting for Christmas. And he goes, how do you know that? He goes, I felt your presence. I was sceptical when including it, but actually, Christmas is coming up. And believe it or not, it's only 26 days. And I'm not really that excited because I know it's going to be stressful. But it seems like in the Christmas period, we need a lot of peace. Which leads me on to my title. Is it a piece of cake? I know. Sorry about that.
Bring back Richard. Hey?
Yeah. I've listened to a lot of your preachers, Richard. So what I thought I'd do is I'd read an article I read a while ago, probably about a few months. I want to read it to you. And you can laugh. All right? Yeah. So it's an article that came out in 2008. And there was a television show based on it. And it's about unusual phobias. So things that people are afraid of that you wouldn't probably expect. So I'm going to read it out. So it says, while spiders and heights are common sources of anxiety, many people's lives are blighted by phobias of seemingly innocuous objects. David Allinson, a therapist based at Addensbrooke Hospital in Cambridge, was filmed treating some of the worst sufferers in an ITV1 documentary that was shown next week, but that's not next week. They included Sue Williams, 37, from Dudley in the West Midlands, who is so terrified of knees, yes, you heard me right, your knees, that she hasn't been able to touch her own for 16 years, and cannot say the word kneecap without bursting into tears. This is a quote, I don't like my own, I can't touch them. I certainly can't touch anyone else's. I know it's strange, people tease me about it, and they've got every right to, but I think I'm the normal one and everyone else is weird.
She needs some help. Yeah,
it's going to be a recurring theme, isn't it? Until her therapy sessions, Mrs. Williams was unable to wash her knees in the bath and could not look at her husband's knees. Mr. Anderson's treatment involved showing her photographs of knees, which reduced her to sobs. And in the final session, he wore a pair of shorts and encouraged her to look at his kneecaps until the feeling of terror had subsided. Another person, Louise from Gloucester, has a phobia of peas. Yes, peas that you eat, which means you cannot walk down the frozen aisle of a supermarket. Explaining her dislike of peas, she said, they tend to just look at me, ganging up on me. All the hairs on the back of my neck go up, and I have to know where they are in the supermarket so I don't go down them. It's just controlling my life. I want to be a dinner lady at my daughter's school, but I can't do it because they're eating peas. Other sufferers includes Kim from Cambridge, who is terrified of barns.
There's a rhyming thing coming through.
Is there?
Peas and knees.
Peas and knees and barns. the well-known rhyming phrase. Yeah, so frightened of barns is very hampering in the summertime because I would like to drive around with the roof of my car down, but I can't because then there's nothing to protect me. And just one more, someone's frightened of frogs that she sprints from her car to her front door in case one is lurking in her garden. And, quote, I have a sixth sense from frogs. When it has been raining, I'm on red alert. I hyperventilate and I'm gripped by fear. I mean, how crazy is that? I mean, we'd never have thought that these sort of things that we do in our everyday life can actually scare us and can get to us. But actually, sometimes in life, things do. And it doesn't matter. It's like the whole service has been today about things that we're afraid of, things that we're struggling through. When actually, sometimes it's not clear cut, you know, like this and this and this are stereotypical things we should be afraid of. Sometimes it's a bit, you know, it's a bit more deeper than that, a bit more weirder, if you want to say it like that. But there are some major problems out there, life-threatening things, and I just want to read out some statistics. And sometimes we can gloss over them, but as I'm reading this out, just remember that these are people that are experiencing this. So the UK has one of the most highest rates of self-harm in Europe. Around 1 in 250 people self-harm. Between 1 in 12 and 1 in 15 children and young people deliberately self-harm. According to a 2013 survey, nearly 1 in 5 adults suffer from anxiety and depression. And the World Health Organization puts it about 15% of the population. Nearly 80,000 children suffer from depression. And over 8,000 of those are under the age of just 10. Suicide is still the most common cause of death of men under 35. It varies each year. For the past 4 years, it's been close to about 5,500 people. 420,000 people each year believe they have work-related stress that was making them physically ill and mentally ill. And an estimated 1 in 100 women between 15 and 30 have anorexia. 1 million people in the UK have been diagnosed with an eating disorder, and that includes girls as young as 7. And when I think about this, it sort of brings a tear to my heart, if you can have that. Because people are suffering through things, and sometimes we can't find a parking space, and we get a bit annoyed, and we go, but actually, there are some very serious things, and some of you might actually suffer from any of those things that I've read out. Personally, if you know me a long time, you know that I've had depression, but I've been healed of that, and that's fantastic. And when I was thinking of all these things that people have, I couldn't help but think of Job. Job's a pure example of it. And when Job went through all his troubles, Job's friends could physically see that Job looked different because of what he was going through. In Job 2, verses 12 to 13, it really just sums this up. It says, when they saw Job from a distance, they scarcely recognized him. Wailing loudly, they tore their robes and threw dust in the air over their heads to show their grief. I mean, who does that these days? Back in those days, they could see that he was completely distraught. He was torn from the inside out. And they physically poured dust over their heads. That doesn't happen these days. Then they sat on the ground with him for 7 days and 7 nights. No one said a word to Job, for they saw that his suffering was too great for words. 7 days. Who do you know that has depression stays silent for 7 days? I know no one has done that. When I had depression, I think I didn't speak for about 3 or 4 hours, but not days. Job is the sort of like the person who experienced this sort of thing in a really deep and powerful way. And it's important to realize that actually we go through the same and that we struggle. However, but we know Job was a faithful man and that there is a way out. Back in year 9 in school, we were at BCC and I was in the youth group, Energy, in case you didn't know. And for those of you who don't know me longer than about 3 or 4 years, the person that I was before I am now, if that makes sense, was very different. I can hear people agreeing. Yes, you are very completely different, Tim. I used to get very competitive in games, should we say. I used to react in different ways and sort of wore my heart on my sleeve in a way. And I still do it in some ways, but back then it was a bit more serious. And in year 9, we went on a residential away, a weekend away to Croyd. And Sue's smiling because she knows exactly what happens. And we were on the weekend away, and on Sunday morning we decided to have church at the beach. And Freddie knows exactly this one, yeah. So we went down to the beach, and we had a game around us. And, you know, I was up at the, I don't know what you call it, the striking zone or something like that. The base.
Plate.
The plate. Thanks, James. The plate. Got a baseball expert there. We're up at the plate, and I missed the ball. And I felt that I wasn't ready. But, unfortunately, I was out. And I had to deal with that. And the way I dealt with that was to get angry. So imagine this for I'm here, I swing the ball, I miss. You're out, Tim. Wait, no, not happening this. Not literally, but I went mental. I went completely, completely mental. My anger took over, my violence took over, my rage consumed me, if you want to say that. And stormed off, and I went to this big sort of area of rocks. I just sat on the rocks, and I was sort of ignoring everyone, and that probably wasn't the best thing to do, if I'm honest. But the game around is finished. I don't know what activity the youth were doing, I have to admit, because I wasn't there. But they got sent out, did an activity, and then youth leader James came over to me. And he basically gave me a grilling, pretty much, as he should have done. I respect him for that. But then he said, come on, Tim, let's take a walk on the beach. So we took a walk on the beach, and we were just walking. And he said to me, Tim, sometimes you struggle through things. And I go, yeah, I know. And he goes, sometimes, but think of it like this. It's almost like you take two steps forward in life, and you take one step back. So when something's going right, you take a step forward. And then maybe something in school goes well. Maybe you get a good grade in your assignment or something. Take a step forward. But then, something like this might happen. So you take a step back. But then, the thing we should do now is try and take two more steps forward. It doesn't matter how many steps you take back. As long as you're taking steps forwards, you're progressing. And actually, if you take two more steps forwards and one more step back, and carry on and carry on, soon you're over here, as opposed to when you're over there. You're going forwards. You're not looking back. And that really spoke to me. And in that time, above all the sort of worry that I was feeling and all the anger and all the problems, actually, I felt inner peace right in here through one little picture. In the deepest of circumstances, in the darkest time, in the angriest situation, I felt pure peace. And it's really important that we feel that ourselves. In Mark 4, there's a beautiful story. It's about Jesus calming the storm. I think it's in verse 35 to 41. But I want to look at one verse in particular. And the basic story of Jesus calming the storm is that the disciples are in the boat. Can't remember if they're on, is it Lake Galilee? Lake Galilee, sometime like that. And they're in the boat, and Jesus is asleep on the back on some cushions, which you think, fantastic, right? And then the storm comes, and it buffets the boat here and there. And the disciples, they freak out. They panic. They go, ah! I don't know what's going on. And have you ever noticed, it's interesting, when you're the disciples, the people that he took with them in the boat, they were fishermen. That's what they did. And if the fishermen are panicking, you know something's wrong. Sometimes when the expert starts to go, hold on a minute, this is dangerous, you're going to start to worry because they know what sailing's all about. They know what they can do to stop things. However, when they're in this storm and they're being blown away and they're being horrendously pelted by rain and I don't know whether there was hail, you know, maybe a tornado over there and maybe a tidal wave coming their way, we don't know. But when the experts start to panic, you know something's wrong. And they woke Jesus up and they go, Jesus, Jesus, we're going to die. And he's like, don't you trust me? I love that. He could have just said, you silly little things, go away. Don't think that. I'm just going to leave now and let you deal with this by yourself. But no, he says, don't you trust me? And maybe we could be thinking that ourselves. That maybe we should be trusting in Jesus a bit more. Through the darkest circumstances, through the biggest storm, through the loudest waves, through the wettest weather. Don't you trust Jesus? I want to draw your attention to verse 38. It says this, Jesus was sleeping at the back of the boat with his head on a cushion. The disciples woke him up, shouting, Teacher, don't you care that we're going to drown? And the main bit is that what I want to emphasize anyway is not that, teacher, don't you care that we're going to drown? The point I want to emphasize is that Jesus was sleeping at the back of the boat. He was in the boat. He could have easily been somewhere else. But he chose to be in the boat. He chose to be with us. He chose to be with the disciples. And sometimes I think it's good to remember that actually Jesus is in our situations. And even though he may be sleeping, or may appear like he's sleeping, actually he's in the boat with us. He's in the storm with us. He's in the trouble with us. He's in the depression with us. He's in whatever with us. I think sometimes we need to remember that. Don't you trust him? When God gives us peace, it doesn't take away our problems. Sometimes people think that when you get peace, you know, everything's sorted, done, tick the box, I've got the peace thing, you know, got the peace treaty, all my problems are over there, and I'm over here, I'm walking away. Sometimes people can have that mentality, but actually, more times than not, we still have that situation to deal with. Whatever it is, whether it's a small thing, whether finding the parking space, or cooking a tea without burning it, which I know personally I need to work on, or whether it's something more serious. But the beauty of God's peace is that it gives us the strength to deal with it. It doesn't take things away. God has the power to take things away. But sometimes he does something even better, and he gives us the strength to deal with it. He gives us his power and his strength. God's peace brings a wholeness to us. It fills a gap inside of us. That did for me when I was at Croyd. That even though everything around me was crumbling and it seemed like there was no escape, God's peace really touched my heart. My heart started to feel like it was just closing up. It was, you know, absorbing it, giving me that power. When you feel whole, it leads to pure joy. And joy is different than happiness. Happiness is something that you do that makes you feel happy, i.e. watching I'm a Celebrity or Strictly Come Dancing. Personally, that doesn't make me happy. Oh, I can't stand Strictly. Just people dancing, you know. Can't stand it. No offence to those dancers out there, I do apologise. But joy is something that happens from deep within. Joy starts inside and goes outwards as you express it. Happiness comes from the outside and comes to you. I've wrote here, joy cannot be beat by anything. I love joy. Psalm 4 verse 8 says, "In peace I will lie down and sleep, for you, O Lord, will keep me safe." When was the last time you slept well? It can be a simple thing like that. When was the last time you went to bed and didn't have to worry about what's happening the next day at work, or what's happening the next day at church, or something like that, or being nervous about something? When was the last time you properly had a good night's sleep? Proverbs 14 verse 30 says, "A peaceful heart leads to a healthy body." And you see that peace isn't just feeling calm. Peace leads to other things. It leads to health. It leads to sleep. It leads to energy. It leads to all these things. You can get the perseverance from God. You can get the power from God. You can get the motivation and the desire to be able to deal with your problems. It's not just a simple thing of it does one thing. It's a multi-purpose gift. And it's fantastic. A famous verse in the Bible, everybody probably knows it if you're a Christian, but it's Isaiah 40 verse 31. "But those who trust in the Lord will find new strength." But we have to trust in God first. Yes, he will give us the strength, but we have to trust in him first. If we trust him through whatever we've got, it's a real test of our character, I know. Sometimes it's difficult. When you've got all these things going on, you think, well, I don't know what I'm going to do about this. This seems like, you know, it's like Samuel with earlier. You know? All these things happened to him, and he could have just said, right, I'm leaving that, I'm going this way. But no, he trusted in the Lord, and he provided for him. And actually, there's a lot going on in Samuel's life that you can be thankful for. And it's really difficult, I know. I've been through there where I haven't trusted in the Lord through my situations. But actually, when I did, they got solved. And that's all part of God's purpose and God's plan. They will soar high on wings like eagles. They'll run and not grow weary. They'll walk and not faint. That's fantastic. I know sometimes we can brush over these well-known passages. But actually, when we think about it, and when we let the words come into our heart and affect us, it can be the most powerful. Peace is proof that it doesn't always change the circumstances. God didn't change the circumstances for Jesus on the cross. Jesus had to die. But it's proof that God always has a purpose and a plan in that situation. Whether it's difficult, whether it's unbearable, whether it's like that. God's purposes and his will always comes out of it. There's a great passage in Job, and it's quite a long one. So you can follow if you want, or it'll be on the screen. And it comes from Job 5, and it's one of Job's friends, Eliphaz, and he speaks to Job. And he's basically in sort of response to it. And Job has had all these things that's happened to him. His health has been affected. His family has been affected. His livelihood has been affected. He's in the deepest place. And his friend says this to him. He says, "If I were you, I would go to God and present my case to him. He does great things, too marvelous to understand. He performs countless miracles. He gives rain for the earth and the water and water for the fields. He gives prosperity to the poor and protects those who suffer. He frustrates the plans of schemers, so the work of their hands will not succeed. He traps the wise in their own cleverness, so their cunning schemes are thwarted. They find it is dark in daytime, and they grope at noon as if it were night. He rescues the poor from the cutting words of the strong, and rescues them from the clutches of the powerful. And so at last, the poor have hope, and the snapping jaws of the wicked are shut. But consider the joys of those corrected by God. Don't despise the discipline of the Almighty when you sin. Sometimes when God gives us challenges, we can think, oh God, why have you done this? This seems like the last thing I want. And we can get quite distraught, and we can feel like we're in a pit. But actually, when God gives us those, it's an encouragement. It's an encouragement to really press into him. For though he wounds, he also bandages. He strikes, but his hands also heal. From six disasters he will rescue you. Even in the seventh, he will keep you from evil. He'll save you from death in time of famine, from the power of the sword in time of war. You will laugh at destruction and famine. Wild animals won't terrify you. You'll be at peace with the stones of the field." And it's wild animals. Oh, yeah, I missed that bit. "You'll know that your home is safe. When you survey your possessions, nothing will be missing. You will have many children. Your descendants will be as plentiful as grass. You will go to the grave at a ripe old age, like a sheaf or grain harvested at the proper time." And this is the bit that really stood out to me. It said, "We have studied life and found all this to be true. Listen to my counsel and apply it to yourself." It's all good hearing a talk and thinking, yes, I need God's peace. But actually, if you don't apply it to your life, what good's it going to be? We need to let that peace come to us. We need to trust God. That's what it comes down to. Even in the darkest circumstance, we trust God. We get peace. We get the strength to deal with it. But we still have to do a lot more. We still have to trust. We have to trust all the time. We have to trust. We have to speak with other people because they might have wisdom in that situation. There's a lot to think about, I know. And sometimes when you're in the deepest, darkest situation, it can feel and seem almost impossible. However, when you hear people come up to the front and give testimony at church about how God's helped them, it actually encourages you, it quickens your spirit, it raises your morale up. And actually it says, you know what, God? You can do anything. And God can do anything. He can do anything and everything under our wildest imagination. We can't think of anything that he can't or can do. If that makes sense. One of my favourite films is A True Story. And it's a film called Coach Carter. I preached about it to the youth and that seemed to go well, which is a good sign. And I don't want to ruin the whole film, but I need to explain what happens in it. This new coach comes along, and he's called Coach Carter, obviously. And this bit I showed to the youth was where he meets the young boys for the first time. And these young boys are from Richmond, Virginia, which I have no idea what that is, but it's in Virginia. And they're very sort of, you know, I'd say they're stereotypical young men. You know, a lot of them are, you know, of Asian descent, African descent even. And they had very opinionated people, very upfront with people, have this aggression, this passion that someone basically says to them to go away, they're going to knock their lights out. It's basically who they are. And this coach comes in and he basically says, right, this is what's going to happen. If you don't like it, you can get out of my gym. I love that. Sometimes that's what God does with us, in a way. He says, if you don't do this, go away. Obviously, he doesn't say go away because he loves us very dearly and I don't want you to, you know, don't you think I'm misleading you. But sometimes we need those instructions. And he gives this team, he says, here's a contract. He says, if you abide by this contract, you will succeed. And a few people leave. And then this one kid called Timo, T-I-M-O, Timo. Basically, he bat chats. He basically, you know, he decides to get all in the face of the coach and he's like, you know, I'll take you out, yeah, I'll punch you in the face, I'll knock you out, yeah, you won't be alive. Something like that. I'm paraphrasing, of course. But, you know, he had that thing and the coach got rid of him. He said, get out. But actually, Timo realised that he needed that basketball coach. He needed that group. So he came back. He fought for his place. And what he fought for was doing press-ups and suicides. Suicides basically running in a line and touching your hand on the line. Doing tons of those, tons of press-ups. And he had to do a certain amount in a week, and he failed. He did an impressive job, but he failed. But his team put their neck on the line. And they helped him finish. So he got back on the team, started playing. And then Coach Carter, mid-game, he subbed him in and he's like, what's your deepest fear? And he's like, what? It's like, what's your deepest fear? Anyways, he didn't have an answer. So he went on the pitch, carried on with the movie. Then they weren't meeting the terms of their contract, the team, which was to maintain a certain grade point average, which, if you didn't know, is like averaging a certain grade or a certain level of education in those days. And because the team weren't doing that, they had to, instead of practicing basketball, they were practicing education, which you think is quite, you know, really serious for a basketball coach to be taking those things. But actually, it was very serious. And he needed to do that to prove that his point will work. Basically, he didn't like this, Timo didn't like this, he left. And then something happened and he came back on the team. I know what you're thinking, he's a bit bipolar. But he came back on the team. And all sorts of things happen in this film. I don't want to ruin it for you. It's a fantastic film. I really encourage you to go and see it. But in that time of the film, I reckon that Timo was constantly thinking of that question that he asked him. What's your deepest fear? Have you ever thought what your deepest fear is? Just out of curiosity. Do you have any fears? Personally, I fear the Lord, but that might not count. And basically, at the end of the film, he answers him. And he says this, it's really powerful. He says, our deepest fear is not that we are inadequate. Our deepest fear is that we are powerful beyond measure. It is our light and not our darkness that most frightens us. Your playing small does not serve the world. There's nothing enlightened about shrinking so that other people won't feel insecure around you. We are all meant to shine as children do. It's not just in some of us. It's in all of us. And this is the bit that really stumped me. And as we let our own lights shine, that's the light of Jesus, we unconsciously give other people permission to do the same. As we are liberated from our fear, as we are released, as we are set free from our fear, our presence automatically liberates other people. I have no words for that. Our deepest fear is that we are powerful beyond measure. If we trust in Jesus through our situations, we find God's peace. That peace leads to power. It leads to freedom. It leads to deliverance. It leads to all these things. And actually, I haven't considered that. Am I afraid of that? Am I afraid of all this power that God's given me? As we let the light of Jesus shine from us, we unconsciously give other people permission to do the same. As we release Jesus from our lives, people release Jesus from their lives. We start to have an impact. God starts to really work in people. You know, that's how revival sweeps across nations. When this preacher, you know, imagine all these stories about people in, like, you know, big stadiums and they preach and things like that. When they express Jesus and the love of Jesus comes into them. And then as they respond to that, they start to express that themselves. It's an ongoing process. It's fantastic. Philippians 4 verse 6 and 7. It's really fantastic. It says, don't worry about anything. Instead, pray about everything. Tell God what you need and thank him for all that he has done. That's what Sam did. He thanked Jesus for that he was alive. Then you will experience God's peace, which exceeds anything we can understand. His peace will guard your hearts and as you live in Christ Jesus. And I just want to read it from the Message version. It's really, really beautiful. Don't fret or worry. Instead of worrying, pray. Let petitions and praises shape your worries into prayers, letting God know your concerns. Before you know it, a sense of God's wholeness, everything coming together for good, will come and settle you down. It's wonderful what happens when Christ displaces worry at the center of your life. I found that really powerful. So what is God speaking to you about today? I know there's a lot of things that I've mentioned and it might be sort of wordy and things like that. But even if you take one thing, I'd rather you take that one thing and apply it and take everything that I've said and not do anything about it. Could it be that you're praying for peace more in your life? About being reminded that God is with you in every situation like he is on that boat? Or maybe realizing that we are powerful beyond measure? Whatever he's speaking to you about, try and apply it to your lives when necessary, and you will reap what you sow. Amen.